You're listening to WCOM LP Chapel Hill and Carrboro 103.5 FM. And welcome to Claudio Speakeasy and Radio Theater. Your host, Claudio, Renaissance man and bard of WCOM, has opened the doors for us again and is inviting you all in to find a seat, get comfortable in the place where you're always welcome and can always expect the best. Good morning, Claudio.
Good morning. Good morning, Carrboro and the Big Chill.
What's your life been like this past week?
Well, I'm still in it.
I'm glad to hear that.
Still above ground, happy to say. Oh, goodness. Let me try and get this mic going here.
Right.
Anyway, so how is your yurt coming and this this property thing happening on your...
Well, actually, I have started my my house journal blog. And if everybody's interested in you just go to housejournal.wordpress.com, and you'll find pictures of the 40-foot army tent I put up on the property 20 years ago.
And witness it for yourself.
But this time I am I'm wanting to put up some sort of a legal residence that I can actually drive into the property. So, and we're playing around with microphones, I mean headphones right now, so Cloudy can hear himself.
Okay, got it.
Okay, you got it?
Yes.
Okay.
Sorry about that, folks. Couldn't hear my voice at all. There we go.
Okay, you hear yourself
much
now.
Better now. Yes.
All right. Terrific.
Now I can have a chat with that fella.
Okay.
We've got a very good friend of mine that I actually can't believe it's been 30 years since I've laid eyes on you. Bruce Whitman. Bruce Whitman is a videographer with Eagle Video Productions. It's his own company, but he used to work for Channel 5 many moons ago. I met him in the 80s. And we're going to sort of pry into his life in just a few moments. Good morning, Bruce.
Good morning, Claudio. How you doing?
Great having you on.
Thanks.
I want to give a quick acknowledgement to the Historic Carolina Theater of Durham. There's all sorts of stuff going on there, changing. We now have a new president, Bob Nocek. And I remember having him on this radio show and telling him, I'm not sure I want to work for a guy who's, or work for, have a boss whose name is Nocek. That's worse than checks in the mail. And he was actually a good sport about it.
Yes.
So shout out to Bob. But big shout out to the Carolina Theater for being the primary sponsor of Claudio Speakeasy and Radio Theater. And since we are on the way to that radio theater, I'm just going to go ahead and slip into Bruce's life. Really good to have you in. Bruce, you go all the way back to, I'm looking at some notes here. Hot as hell on a summer night, wearing jacket, coming off plane from California. Moved to Raleigh same day and year as my future wife.
Right, there's a bug
as big as your hand. I figured I'd give the condensed version.
You have to believe in destiny. You
yes.
really do.
Mm-hmm.
And you do, don't
so
you?
So you came here, you're saying you came here in the same time that your wife came
on
here.
On the same day.
That's extraordinary.
Yeah, so I came from California. I was like 13 at the time. My dad got a new job here.
And his wife's name is Martha.
My wife's name is Martha, and she came from a very small town in North Carolina. And she came here to move to Raleigh and on the same day and the same year.
That's extraordinary. And how long did it take you guys to meet?
A couple years. That's a very interesting story because she was, we went to the same church together, and she seen me up on there playing the guitar for mm-hmm. the guitar mass there. And she said, I'd like to meet that guy. And then couldn't find me. And 2 years later, she was taking guitar. Her guitar teacher had to go to Europe, and she needed someone to teach while he was gone. She got a couple names from her girlfriend, and I was one of them. So she came over to my house for a guitar lesson. There I was, the guy she'd been looking for. There was only going to be one guitar lesson. So she left her wallet.
She left her wallet?
She left her wallet at my house, so I'd have to find it, find out where she lived, and bring it back to her, and that's how we got to meet.
I've never heard of leaving a whole wallet before.
Oh, that's pretty effective.
So
I remember that.
So this way you could pay for the phone call, whatever you needed.
There you go. So I had to bring it back to her, and we dated for 6 years, and we've been married 32 years.
My goodness.
Wonderful. Wonderful.
Amazing. And I met you and your brother Dana in, to my recollection, I was chef at the Northridge Country Club. This goes back to the 80s, and I was a member of a spa in Cary. I don't even remember the name of that spa,
yeah.
But I met you and Dana in the steam room.
Hot place.
Of all places to meet anybody, but it's a really amazing what pops out of the underground every once in a while. But I remember seeing some of, or just learning about you from through Dana, and then seeing some of your video footage, and just fell in love with your work. And I remember a couple of particular pieces that impressed me, to which you used the music of Dan Fogelberg as I don't think there was any language in the videos. It was just scanning. I think it was horses. And you used Run for the Roses by Dan Fogelberg, and I thought it was beautifully put together. And that impressed me enough into wanting to meet you.
Wow. Well, and the power of video, I've always believed in it.
Yeah, and still do it.
Oh, yeah.
So tell us about, let's start from the 60s and spill into your life with ABC TV and how you got into videography.
Well, I want to tell all the young folks out there that you really have to get an education to do well. And I, of course, didn't get that speech. And I almost didn't make it through high school. And then I finally graduated and worked ditches for 6 months and realized I needed to do something better with myself and went back to school.
It's funny how motivating those ditches can be.
I'm serious. So what was neat is I got to tell you a story about an epiphany. And so...
Not Cinderella, an epiphany.
An epiphany. Let me go back by telling you that one of my life goals is to help young kids make it through school. And doing talking to young folks, I always ask them, well, especially high school seniors, I always ask them, what are you going to do? Well, I'm going to go to college. Well, what are you going to do in college? What do you want to do with that? I don't know. And so my unscientific study has been that about 90 to 95% of young kids that are high school seniors don't know what they want to do. Don't know where they want to go. Okay, so that's kind of scary to me.
For some reason, it is not. You're right. It's not really given a focus. Whereas in places like Europe, you're practically in your, I mean, comparably in your 20s as far as sense of responsibility goes at age 15.
Yeah. So, to me, the shortest distance between two points is a line, and a lot of the kids don't have a line. They don't have a place to go. They don't have a goal. So, and to me, that it's a lot of waste when you go to a college. And you spend all that time, and you don't know where you want to go. And, I mean, in some ways that's nice, you know, if you're in sailing and you're just sailing around. But to use all that education, it's really good to have a straight line. And these kids don't have a straight line. Most people don't. It's not really their fault. So one of my life goals is to help kids learn, through the power of video, how to decide what's their gift, and how can I use that gift and you learn through education and use that gift, harness it through their life. Anyway, so... I didn't have that gift.
Before we go there, let's find out a little more about you
videography. So here's my story. So I didn't know where I wanted to go. I almost didn't make it through high school. I dug ditches for a while and decided to go back to college. But what made that decision was this epiphany. So I'm driving along. I don't know what I want to do. I kind of like photography. I kind of like music. I do like music a lot. Mm-hmm. And I look up at the billboard. I'm driving along. I see this billboard. And it's a WRL-TV billboard. And there's a guy there with a TV camera on his shoulder. And I look at that picture and I said, that is what I want to do.
That's great. It was a sign that was put there just for you.
Just for me. And 7 years later, I worked for that man, Jack Edwards.
That's interesting.
And so what I did, all of a sudden I had a goal. I had a line between A and B. Mm-hmm. And so I went and took the SAT.
And at the time, you were more of an electrician than anything else.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I actually took time off of work to go to see where I wanted to go. I was going to go to UNC or go to NC State, and I met this wonderful man on a Friday night, 5 o'clock. I said, I don't know where I want to go. He said, let me take you around to NC State. And he took me around. And he showed me the TV station, and he showed me all these things. And I said, this is where I want to go. And another wonderful thing happened because going to NC State, I got in on the co-opship program. Mm-hmm. And so I was working at Channel 5 while I was going to school. So by the time I graduated, I had 2 years experience, and I got towards my life goal of being that news photographer. It took me 7 years.
Amazing.
But I knew exactly where I wanted to go. And I think that's what I want to help young people do with the power of videos, help them learn their gift to focus to the direction they want to go.
And to make a long story short, how did you jump over from just being, you know, with your electronics background to pursuing those heights in the media?
Well, that epiphany helped me draw out the fact that I'm really good at taking pictures and video, and that's where it was. And it was interesting because I went to Channel 5, and I said, I want to shoot film. The guy says, no, you don't want to shoot film. Film is going out of here. This is back in the in the late 70s, mm-hmm. were going into video. I said, okay, I can do that. And here's another irony. I live next door to Jim Goodman, who owns Capital Broadcasting.
Right, yes.
And we play basketball together, and he took me around the TV station when I was trying to decide what I wanted to do. But it was that epiphany that really got me going into deciding to go back to school, get my degree. I did a five-year program in 4 years.
Ah, right.
Did the co-opship program, so I went to work at Channel 5, worked my way up through the studio, cameraman, ENG technician.
So the answer to my question there is you basically worked from the inside up. I was just,
oh, absolutely.
I was wondering how you manipulated the whole thing there.
And that's another thing. There's so many kids who want to go into broadcasting, but they still don't know what they want to do. The biggest thing really is to get a co-opship or an internship mm-hmm. so they have experience before they graduate. Also, they should work on a demo video as they work in school. Because I get, you know, I've been in business now for 20 years. I get resumes from all over.
I'm sure.
From young kids. And they'll do things like they'll misspell my name or they'll misspell a word. Or they'll send the resume to me, but it's really to another company, you know. And I actually give a little talk to kids, and I tell them, you know, what is the most I'm going to give you a list of things. You tell me what's the most important thing that I would want to know. One, your experience with television, or two, that your resume is not misspelled, or three, that you know all about the software. And they just, only a couple of them understand that it really is about the resume. Because when they get out of school, they don't have experience.
No,
they're coming here to learn, and not to teach me, like mm-hmm. some kids want to do. Oh, I can help your company. You know, I know all about video.
Yes, I studied at so-and-so, right.
Yeah. But no, it's really about details, and especially with video. It can cost you $50,000 if you misspell a word. Mm-hmm. So you want to make sure that if a young person comes to you, that they took the time. There's no deadline on a resume. Why would you give me a resume that's misspelled? You know, so that's the kind of message I like to give young kids.
And I think also what you're saying, too, is that when you leave this educational realm, is put on the hat of humility, find a place that you like, and then go into it, and don't be too proud to work your way from the bottom up.
That's the best way to learn. And learn. And what's neat about that is you're getting paid while you're learning.
And you're inside.
Yeah.
And you're where you want to be now, you just got to climb that ladder.
And so, but these young kids will come and they really, you're right, they need to be humble. They need to say, look, I don't know anything. I want to learn from you.
You come in as a know-it-all, nobody's going to want to teach you.
Exactly. Exactly. And I heard a quote the other day I thought was really good. It says, and may have been... King, Larry King, who said that. He said, I never learned anything while I was talking.
Excellent, excellent.
Yes.
So, I always like the young kids to come in and just listen and just pick my brain and pick the brains of people who you're working with so that they can get better.
Larry King was also known, I think, isn't he getting ready to retire? But they were making some sort of, they were mocking him recently on radio because he said that he never prepared for an interview. It's just like he looks at the person and goes, so, you know, what's it like to be you? Go ahead and tell me now. So you may continue now, Bruce.
Well, that's funny. Well, I got out of the WR, NC State, had a great time there, wonderful place.
Especially during that time frame, because that's when I came to North Carolina. And the 70s, this was a great place to be in the 70s.
It was awesome. It was awesome. And I did work at the radio station there at WKNC.
Uh-huh, remember
and, that, yeah. And worked at theater, at Thompson Theater, but finally graduated and got to work at WRL-TV, and I was there for 10 years. I worked my way up from the studio cameraman. Then I worked in ENG News. I did all these live shots, and I'll tell you a story about that. LiveStar. That was Channel 5's first satellite truck.
Ah, okay.
And at the time, you know, we're all very competitive in television. We always want to be the first. And, you know, the first WRL-TV was the first hour newscast show in the state. Channel 5 was the first one that had a news helicopter.
I knew about the helicopter, but I didn't realize they were the first to have the one-hour show. Interesting.
And, you know, local in North Carolina, I believe.
Right.
But don't quote me on that one. But okay. Here's one that I know they wanted. They wanted to be the first one for the satellite truck. And so they flew mm-hmm. me and Fred Taylor, who's a reporter at the time, down to Orlando or Tampa to pick up the satellite truck. Okay. And we get there. And there's our competition, WSOC, or WBTV. WBTV Charlotte had a satellite truck there, too. And they were both being built at the same time in this warehouse. And so the engineers had finished Charlotte's TV satellite truck first. So they got in their truck and they drove off. They're going to drive back to Charlotte to fire it up for 6 o'clock that night and be the first one on the air. Mm-hmm. We didn't want that to happen. So they gave us our satellite truck about 10 or 11 o'clock. And I said to Fred, I said, Fred, let's just fire it up right now. Let's go set it up so we're live at noon and we'll beat those guys by a few hours. And so we did a live shot right there in Tampa. I had my camera there. We showed everyone the live truck and how technology is going to change. And that way, we was able to be the first ones to have the satellite truck in North Carolina.
Even though you weren't in North Carolina at the time.
Well, but just the fact, I mean, with a satellite truck, yes. You can go anywhere in the country.
Right, right.
But
yeah.
But the idea is we wanted to be the first one on the air.
Right, right.
Yeah, so we had to beat those guys.
Not bad. The old story about the early worm.
The early bird, the early worm is the one that gets in trouble.
Yeah, oh, boy, did I have it backwards. Well, I'm on the worm side. I always like the underdog. Did I really say that early worm?
Yes.
Poor bugger.
Back up the tape.
Yes. So what are some of your favorite moments in that particular business? And I know you've since branched out into your own, but you worked for several television stations.
I've been very blessed. I worked at Channel 5 for 10 years. I worked with another partner for 6 years, and I've had my company, Eagle Video Productions, for 20 years.
Oh, okay. So I was confusing you having another partner with being...
But with one of my moments at WRL-TV, I went to Russia with 100 North Carolinians, Friendship Force.
Oh, nice.
Trip with Mrs. Hunt.
That must have been perfect for swinging the camera.
Well, I tell you what was interesting about that trip is that we landed the day of Brezhnev's funeral.
My goodness.
And because of that, everything got changed around, and they took my gear away and locked it up, and the airport wouldn't let us have it.
Didn't want any exposure or...
They wouldn't let us have our gear. We worked for 5 days trying to get it back. We had Arm & Hammer trying to help us, ABC News, mm-hmm. The governor, all these people trying to help us get our TV camera back. It was a crazy time. And so finally they said, okay, we're going to let you have your gear back when you leave the country. Well, the issue was we weren't going to leave from Moscow. We were going to leave from, at the time, it was called Leningrad. Mm-hmm. So we were going to take a train from Moscow to Leningrad and then fly out from Leningrad. Well, that wasn't going to work. So they finally did give us our gear back on the way to the airport, on the way to the train station. And so we had a really nice trip, an all-night train ride from Moscow to Leningrad, celebrating the fact we got our TV gear back. I was afraid I was going to lose my job if they kept my camera, you know. And that was... quite a trip.
Yeah, I bet it was. So were you on the Eurail for that, or what? Do you recall the train? I remember the Eurail being the train that passed through all the countries back in those days.
No, this is just the Soviet train. You know, this is in the 80s. But I'll tell you what, I came back home with a really strong appreciation for our country. And when I had an opportunity to start my own company, I named it Eagle Video for the national symbol because of that.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
I remember it was a time when the only time I've ever spent out of this country was 6 weeks in Spain. And this was maybe 3 or 4 years after Franco died. So it was still very restrictive feeling mm-hmm. there. And they had a air controllers strike across all of Europe. Mm-hmm. There was a taxi cab strike. So you couldn't get from where I was staying to even get to the airport if a plane was taking off. And at the same time, a general had been assassinated out in the streets of Madrid.
My goodness.
And I thought, I cannot walk across the ocean and
interesting
get home.
Time to be there.
I don't think I'm ever going to go anywhere again where I am separated by an ocean. I've got children.
And now she won't leave Carborough.
Yeah, now
there you go.
Can't get me
safe
to
and
even drive
safe and safe
Raleigh.
At Carborough.
But yeah. you appreciate the fact that
you
at
really
that
do.
Time everybody was walking around, nobody looked you straight in the eye.
All right.
And I can remember my daughter was making a tour with her high school class at the time. I'm just talking about appreciating a country. And
great country.
I met her in Madrid, mm-hmm. and she's walking down the street. And I told her, I mean, she's walking like we walk, straight up, straight ahead, looking straight at you. And I said, I feel like my eyes have been washed. I mean, it was just...
A veil has been removed.
Yes, because everybody was so subdued.
Even during my apprenticeship there, when I took as much opportunity as I could to travel, whether I was hitchhiking or doing the Eurail, when you crossed from one country into another, there was this Gestapo-like military presence that checked you for your papers, your personal Ausweis or passport, whatever paperwork you needed. And if you didn't have it, they would make things quite awkward for you.
Well, you had military all over the place. I mean, Spain is beautiful. Madrid was beautiful.
Oh, no doubt.
I mean, it was. I thoroughly enjoyed my visit there. The food was great. But you did have the Guardia Civil walking around with these, what I would call, a sawed-off machine gun on their hips and their hands on it, walking like they owned the streets, and they did.
I remember a time I was crossing through the Bahnhof, the railroad station in Munich, Germany, and I had this sort of hippie flowered hat on my head and this coat, and I guess I probably looked like a hippie, and I was just walking, cutting through it. I was 16 years old, and all of a sudden a cop on either Polizei on either arm lifted me off the ground and took me to a back room to interrogate me because they were convinced I was American and I had drugs, and they were rather surprised when I spoke German to them.
Right. So
and actually had to apologize to me afterwards.
It's good to be here, and I just throwing that in there. Didn't mean to stop the flow.
Yes, we thought we'd illustrate the point.
Yes.
Back to you, Bruce.
Oh, we do have a great country, and I think young folks here can't appreciate it till they leave. And then when they come back, then they understand why we have a great country. It's such a great country of opportunity.
Politically, there's room for improvement, but that's any country in the world.
We still have the best political system in the world. The two-party system, to me, is still the very best.
I just wish they'd put it to better use.
There you go. Well, we're all human.
An undergraduate degree in Latin American studies, and poli-sci was one of the aspects of it. And I had a professor who actually moved to Florida from Cuba, and he said, this country, meaning the United States, has the worst government in the entire world, except for all the rest.
There you go. Yeah. It's because it's run by humans. I mean, there you go.
Yes.
I was just looking at those needles. They seem to be bouncing in the red, but I guess...
Well, they do every once in a while because people are moving in and out. And
I'm still getting used to the new studio, so you have to pardon me for noticing things.
Yes. So if you move back a little, then it doesn't...
Then
it goes
doesn't
way
do
down
that.
Here. And
so you're telling me to get off the mic. I got you.
I'm just telling you to stay in one place over there.
So what do you remember about you and me meeting? I mean, I know that I worked with your brother Dana for a while. He's a very talented musician. And at the time, I was still performing with had the wonderful accompaniment of David Kovach, who was a wonderful... he used to travel with a band called Sunlight, and I met him when I was chef at the Royal Villa. And then he actually lived in Philadelphia, and then when he left Philadelphia to move to North Carolina, we connected and we started performing together, and we actually launched Seafarers at Ira David Woods Theater in the Park. And it was right around that time that I met you and your brother Dana in the steam room. And I have no idea how such thing could ever come out of a steam room, but it became lifetime friendships.
Oh, absolutely. And I think we're connected with food in a lot of ways.
That might well be.
You came to our house one time. We invited you over, and we just had an awesome conversation, listened to music. And we had a nice supper I think my wife made. But then we challenged you. We said, okay, Claudia, you're such a good chef. Let's see you whip up a dessert. And here you have free reign of our kitchen.
Since I had Martha's wonderful cuisine. Yes, I do. And I remember Martha actually telling me initially, we don't really have anything here for dessert, but go ahead and see what you can find. And we ended up having, I can't remember, some sort of a fruited crepes that I made.
I was amazing how you could make a crepe out of our old pan that we had. It was amazing. Something that good that came out of that pan.
It's funny. It was like inviting an artist to come in and just mix the colors.
Exactly.
It was a wonderful time. And one of the things that stood out in my mind that impressed me, I remember that night you were playing a lot of Earl Klug jazz. And I made, here and there, would make comments to Bruce that I really enjoyed that piece, really enjoyed that piece. Well, about 2 weeks after that wonderful, perfect evening, I get this tape in the mail that contained all the pieces I said I liked. And I still have it to this day.
That's great.
That is impressive for somebody to remember that and then do that. To me, that's pure class.
Well, I think everyone here is hard not to love music of some sort.
True.
And I think music sounds like a universal language type of thing. It's interesting. At one time, I had a crossroads where I could have gone either into music or into video. And I decided to go into video, which worked out great. But what's wonderful is every now and then I get to use my music in the video. Because I'm a songwriter.
Okay.
A little bit. I've written over 100 songs with a lot of it with a partner from back in the 70s and the 80s. Mm-hmm. And but every now and then I get to write a piece of music for the video, and it's fun. It's a lot of fun.
And I remember your instrument being guitar, right?
I do play guitar, and now it's gone down another generation. I have a young son named Scott who is incredible at guitar, electric guitar. My wife played a little guitar, I played a little guitar, and he took that synergy and created this awesome. He is such a musician now. He can touch things and not even know the instrument and play it. I mean, he touched the sax, and within 3 days he was playing When a Man Loves a Woman.
You know? Amazing.
He can.
An easy one.
No. And he, I got to brag about him just one time here. We went to the state fair one time, and you may know the village of yesteryear, where everyone comes in the old traditions, right? The old music. Mm-hmm. And there was a guy there who comes there every year who does the hammer dulcimer. He builds hammer dulcimers, and he builds banjos, and he builds guitars, and he's there to play.
I know who you're talking about.
And so our little Scott, who must have been maybe, I don't know, 12 or 13 at the time, had never seen a hammer dulcimer. Hmm. And he loved the sound of that thing. And he looked at that for about 5 minutes. He said, "Do you mind if I try that?" And he picked that up, and within 10 seconds he was playing what is it?
Something of Desiring.
Yeah. So he was playing that with ear, having never touched this instrument before.
That's extraordinary.
That's how talented he is. So I can't wait to see him. He's going to be definitely the artist in our family on the musician side. I can't wait to see what he does with that.
Well, you've certainly channeled something there. Who knows? And as far as I remember, Dana also played a guitar, and did he play harmonica as well? Or am I have a vague memory of harmonica on something, but
don't know that. But he's definitely back in the music scene. He started up his old company, West Street Recordings.
Ah, okay.
I think it's weststreetonline.com for his.
Well, hello, Dana. We need to hook up at some point as well.
He's a great musician. Has written some songs.
I remember very early on in my friendship with him, we ended up opening at the state fair for in front of 5,000 people, and that was the very beginning, and the mayor Upchurch was sitting in the front row, and it was Dana, David Kovach, and myself. I was reciting, and they were backing me up, telling stories as the opening event. And they had my friend, the mayor of Lizardlick, who'd help Bobby McLam get into, I think, Hee Haw or one of those shows, the comedy shows, way back, wanted me to get a little political nudge. So while I was on stage, he had Bobby McLam roll in a black. What do you call those?
Limousine,
yeah. And get out, dressed in black, just to come walk over to the stage, shake my hand, get back in the car, and leave. There's politics for you.
A lot of handshaking.
Oh, Bobby McLam, yeah.
So you had something you were talking about before of the video that you did about with some people who were interested in doing.
Oh, the South African.
South African.
Yeah. Well, okay.
That's a good story to hear, yeah.
One of my life goals is to make enough money so I don't have to worry about it anymore. So then I can use my talents with video to help other people. I mean, that's what I really want to do. And so my goal was to do that when I got older, you know, because you're still trying to make money, raise a family and all that. Well,
and you just can't seem to get older, can you?
I can't.
He still looks like I saw him 25 or 30 years ago. It's amazing.
So one day my son's school went to Camp Seagull for a couple of days to learn about nature and all that. And we met, and I was a parent on call there. I went with them and met this nice young couple from South Africa. And their life goal was to go back to their home country and start a nature camp for young kids. And the reason they did that is back in South Africa, you know, there's 11 national languages there. There's not a lot of cohesiveness like there is here in America with hopefully one language.
One language, indeed.
Yeah. So that's what they wanted to do. And I met them and I got to know them, and they're just a wonderful couple. And I said, "You guys need a video." And they said, "Well, yeah, but we don't have any money." And so I thought about it, and it's another one of those epiphanies. I said, "Okay, I'm going to make you one."
Have you seen a doctor about these epiphanies?
Yeah, well, hopefully it's contagious.
Right.
So I went back a week or so later with a partner, and we just went and videotaped it, interviewed them, shot some stuff with the kids, interviewed the people who ran the camp down there, and came back and asked some other people to help me edit it and put some original music to this thing, and made a video for them, like a fundraising video. And even got some people to make copies for them in PAL so they could take it back to South Africa.
And I've seen it on your website. It's nicely done. As a matter of fact, give us your website and information where people can contact
you. Sure. Well, the company is Eagle Video Productions, and the website's real easy. It's eaglevideo.com. And you can always email me at bruce@eaglevideo.com. But so I made the video for them because I wanted to help them with their life goal. And they took it back to South Africa, and they did start a camp called Camp Nelu, which stands for Nature Education Leads to Understanding.
Which is pretty impressive because they were quite young, as I recall, from just the pictures.
Oh, yeah. So, and so since that time, I try to every year do a little a video for a nonprofit that will help the most people. You know, I've done it for Ronald McDonald House in Durham. Mm-hmm. I've done one for Saving Little Hearts out of Knoxville, Tennessee. Just, you know, try to find a nonprofit that I can help, you know, once a year just to use the power of video to help people.
I used to go up and perform as the Mad Hatter for Haven House for the abused children, which was always a very touching thing to do. I think Ira David Wood channeled me into that realm, but it was amazing. And they do great fundraising for mostly, I think, abused children.
Yeah. We were talking earlier how... you know, you're saying that bored people are boring. I think the young kids...
Only boring people get bored, yes.
Yeah. So I think that these young people that are emailing or texting saying I'm bored, they ought to go and volunteer.
Yeah.
And try to help someone else that's not as lucky as them. And then they'll start appreciating where they are, and they won't be bored anymore.
That's the old thing. If you want good karma, do more for others than you do for yourself.
Exactly. I believe in karma, that's for sure.
Yeah, me too. Seen it come around way too many times.
Yeah.
And I guess we should remind our listeners that we're talking here on WCOM 103.5 FM.
This is Claudio Speakeasy and Radio Theater, the literary and all else. And we have in the studio with us Bruce Whitman, longtime friend. It boggles the mind that I haven't seen this guy for close to 30 years and picked up like yesterday was the last time we connected.
That's what friends do.
I think so. Just proof again that friendship knows no time, no barriers. Now, I've got a whole list here of things that I could pick. You did some work with Charlie Gaddy. As a matter of fact, I recently did some work with Charlie Gaddy myself. I got a role in a film. I'm the narrator, storyteller for a film called The Rusty Bucket Kids about children of today traveling back in time to meet legends like Abe Lincoln and so on back in time, but to meet them as children. And the whole idea behind the project is to get the children of today interested enough in some of these characters and to study up on history. So that we don't keep falling into these cracks and repeating history. And Charlie Gaddy played the grandfather of the children in this particular episode. But it's called The Rusty Bucket Kids, and you can look that up on the web as well. But I was just noticing that you've, of course, naturally done some work with him since he was in that medium.
Oh,
go
yeah.
Go ahead and jump in.
Charlie and I are great friends. I call him CG, and I call him up every now and then. I'm like his computer guru.
Ah.
So I come and help him with that every now and then.
Oh, Bob... We talked about him. A fellow that just took over on the Rusty Bucket Kids. Let me think. I can't think of his surname now. I have no idea why. But you know him. Not Bob. Bud Coggins says.
Oh, yeah.
To tell you hello. We were just at a wedding together recently.
Yeah, Bud Coggins used to work at Channel 5 when I was there. I remember
right.
He was a sales guy.
Yeah, he remembered you well. I brought your name up at the wedding party.
He didn't curse me out. That's good.
No, he didn't.
That's good. Yeah, Charlie Gaddy and I are good buddies. One of the stories with him, he wrote a book on Dr. Leroy Walker, who was...
Charlie wrote a book?
Yes, several books, but this is one that got published. And he so Dr. Leroy Walker is the most successful Olympic coach in history. He's an old black man, about 78, 79 years old now. He used to be chancellor at NCCU mm-hmm. Central. And anyway, so we did a little video on him. We were going to do a documentary on him, on Dr. Roy Walker. And at the same time, Charlie Gaddy was writing a book on him, incredible book. But what was funny with Charlie, he's not, at the time, computer literate.
Mm-hmm.
So when he left Channel 5, they gave him a computer. So he started typing, and then when he got done, he turned it off and turned it back on. It wasn't there anymore.
Oh, no.
So then he'd finally learned how to save things. So he's writing this book on Dr. Leroy Walker, and he'd just save it anywhere, okay? And then all of a sudden the book publisher said, okay, we need it on a floppy you can send to us. And he didn't know anything about it, and it turned – so I had to help him recompile his book. So every time he'd write a chapter, he would print it out. So he had pages and pages, but he had – on the computer.
He was doing it the old-fashioned way.
And on the computer was in 50 different files.
Oh, Lord.
So I had to go back in his computer and help him recompile it into one folder.
My goodness.
And then send it off. Yeah. And so he was amazed it all fit on that little floppy, all these pages that he wrote. And what was so neat is for a gift, he took my wife and I to the Angus Barn as a thank you. And we got to meet Van and take a tour of that awesome winery basement and meet Honk, the person who deals with all the wine down there. And that was just a wonderful – you always think about evenings with friends when you eat.
Yes,
and have,
oh, yes.
That's one of those memorable evenings,
yeah,
of eating with him at the Angus Barn after helping him with his book.
It's amazing how the Angus Barn has maintained over the years, because it was a very strong restaurant when I was chefing restaurants back in the 70s, and it still holds that prominence.
I think they just had their 50th anniversary, didn't they?
Yeah, yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. I mean, not too many restaurants make it that long, do they? I mean, you know.
No.
So what makes a restaurant successful versus not successful?
Customers.
Yeah. Right.
That's a short answer. I like this.
Thank you for that scientific approach.
You're welcome.
I would I think that the times that I ran really successful establishments, it was when we made the establishment a place for people to come to, and not just to come to have a meal, but to come to be received, to be hugged, to be taken to the table, and then seduced with great cuisine. I think you have to cover more than one angle. It's not just that you're having good food, but also make them feel like they're coming to their favorite place
or their family,
where their favorite people work. Yeah,
yeah.
Or that the favorite people run.
That makes sense.
Those have really been places that would stand through difficult times because people love them.
Does location have anything to do with it?
In many cases, I would say yes. But when I think of places like in the Virgin Islands, the main places were so well touristed that they didn't really matter as much. And the places that were more liked, people wouldn't mind going 20, 30 miles out of their way to get there just to be away from the madding crowd, so to speak. When you have five or six ships in the harbor overtaking the entire front end of the island, you just want to sort of go to the east end, go to where the natives go. And that's, of course, I was running a very touristed restaurant, Bluebeard's Castle, up on the hill in St. Thomas. It was one of the most famous places to go to. But after I left that, I disappeared into the island.
Well, what do you think is the most universal cuisine?
Italian.
Well, I'd have to say Italian to a great extent, but as far as cuisine, when you think of the Shakespearean element of cuisine, definitely the French. I would say that pervades.
So what would be a good French dish if you had to introduce someone to some French cuisine?
Oh, Lord, there'd be so many to choose from. I take everything and go in my own direction with it. Having a background in the culinary arts, I know what you can and can't do, not to make that pot blow up, so...
Okay, so we're going to meet some new friends, okay? And we're going to introduce them to French cuisine, and you're going
When did we derail this interview thing here?
While you weren't looking.
Help, well, it's not all about me. I wanted to.
It's about you today, babe. But I would have to say, just to give you a quick answer, that my favorite cuisine on any level would be working with seafood, but I also enjoy vegetarian cuisine. There isn't really much of anything that I wouldn't try. But I would have to say that my background and having an education in it, I really enjoy taking almost anything and going my way with it.
That sounds awesome. I thought about you a while back. I was in New Orleans for the first time.
The Lesson cuisine I love right
and
there.
And I got to try char-broiled oysters.
Uh-huh.
Oh, my gosh. That was incredible. I mean, I don't usually eat I like fried oysters a lot because I don't usually eat fried food. So when I get to eat fried oysters, it's great. But char-broiled oysters on the half shell. This is at this restaurant right there on the river.
Well, they do dip them in olive oil and then just put them back on the shell.
No.
How do they do it?
They got the oyster on the half shell. They throw it right on the grill with some spices and this incredible sauce that I don't know what it is, and they just fire that thing up.
And let the flame leap over the top,
essentially. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It was unbelievable. I ate there, we were there for 2 weeks. We must have ate there four or five times just to get the
fruit. Just to think of what they're going to
Drago's. Drago's was Drago's. The name of the restaurant.
Okay. That's still there. Yeah.
Oh, incredible. So, then when you think about seafood, that's one place I think about.
Definitely one of my passions.
Now, it's interesting. My wife, Martha, cannot eat oysters. And the reason why, when she was little, she grew up in a little town called Roxable, North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
And one of their Christmas traditions is to eat raw oysters on Christmas. I don't know if that's a Southern tradition or what, But they would eat raw.
I don't care. I could do it.
Well, what she did, she was a little girl at the time, and she got up early, and she ate a lot of blueberry Pop-Tarts and then ate some oysters.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh,
and since that time, she doesn't eat oysters.
There are two different sensations for the stomach.
Exactly. Exactly. So I have to eat oysters by myself when we go out to eat.
It's a very blue metaphor that comes to mind when the stomach doesn't settle.
Blueberries, blue metaphor.
Yes, yes. Blueberries kicked out by the oysters.
Oh, man.
Yeah, we'll stop that now.
So have you ever done any videography affecting or working or dealing with the subject of food?
I actually did a cooking show one time with, you might know this person, on right across from Krispy Kreme, Chef Ramo.
Mm-hmm.
Did a three-part cooking show for him. I don't think it ever took off the ground. It had to be distributed, and that didn't really happen. But that was interesting because it was live, you know, live meaning that we just taped it with a bunch of people there as he told his stories and cooked his remoulade.
Remoulade.
Yeah, exactly.
Remoulade. I'm talking to some people now that want to get me on actually, it's been going on for a couple of years now to talk about it. And we've done some footage at the ballpark. I think I remember telling you about that. They want me to do my own cooking show, which I would actually love to do as long as I can take it in an original direction.
Yeah. My wife and I love to watch cooking shows on TV because they're well done. You learn so much from watching. That's just a great use of video.
Yeah, I think
when you see how, you know, how they learn how to cut things and how to use the knife a certain way.
You and I may have to talk to put together a little demo.
Yeah, that sounds good. But what's interesting on, was it the Food Channel? Is that what it is?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the Food Channel.
Yeah, so Giada, we love watching her.
There's a Food Channel. We think this is Food Channel. Go on.
So, you know, I love when I watch things on TV, I'm watching the technical side. I'm watching how it's
Sure, I can see that.
I'm watching how the audio's done. I'm watching how it's edited. I'm watching how, you know, using the different camera angles and all that. So even on the cooking shows, I'm watching how they do things.
That's how I watch movies, too.
Exactly, exactly. So that's interesting how they do it, the cooking show, because you think that the cooking show is done live and it's just with two or three cameras, and it's not. It's all edited.
No, there's no way you could time it right if you do it live.
Well, not only that, is that they'll make mistakes and they want to not show that part, so they'll redo it.
That would be the fun part to see, though. I'd like to show those little parts. Whoops. Glad it landed there. Here we go.
Yeah, exactly.
Those are some of my favorites. I mean, Jacques Pepin, he's had a food show, and mm-hmm. Lydia Bastianich does cooking in Italy, and she'll take you on tours of areas in Italy.
What I'd like to do is combine Taiwan into telling stories while I'm cooking.
Absolutely. That's what makes it interesting. Besides,
exactly.
You know.
Recite a poem while you're making
yes.
crêpes Suzette or something flambé, who knows.
My wife has probably over 1,000 cookbooks. And she always says, well, you're always going to have to eat. I said, yeah, that's true.
So we had a recent guest on, Nancy Salto Chiaffi, whatever her name was, who's got a cookbook coming out.
I'll stick to Nancy right now.
Right,
yes.
Right. Yeah. And it's,
matter of fact, I haven't heard back from her, but at some point I'm sure we will when the book comes out.
Yeah, get her back on the show here.
Yeah.
So you can come and videograph it. Yeah, yeah.
It was two shows ago when we had Nancy on. Yeah. And I cannot remember that beautiful Italian surname.
What kind of do you have a favorite type of thing that you'd like to film?
Well, what I've been kind of focusing on are marketing videos and training videos. And back when I was in the news days, we worked very hard all day, and we had maybe do three to four stories a day. We'd only get to take maybe an hour to work on it and maybe half hour to edit it. So I really love the longer form. So using the power of video to help businesses succeed, make a little 5-minute video that helps them grow their company so they can hire more employees and sell more product and better product. I love that. And a lot of times, like for instance, did a video a while back on a board saw, a panel saw that is bigger than this building. How are you going to show that to people? You can't bring clients in and fly them in just to see if they want to look at it. So you do a video, and you show how it works, and you go to the trade show in Atlanta and show all these people looking at it, and you interview people as testimonials that have used this saw and have had it for 20 years and have made a lot of money with it. And that's the kind of power you put together and show to people, and they get interested and say, oh, I'll take a look at this panel saw, that type of thing. Did a video recently for the New York Transit Authority on escalators. I'm an expert escalator.
I just saw some of the footage that you showed me earlier.
So
this is with your private company now.
This is Well, the name of the company is Schindler Escalator.
No, I mean your company. You're no longer working for Channel 5. It's strictly you now.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, for the last 20 years. So I've taken my skills that I've learned and honed at Channel 5 mm-hmm. and use it to use the power video to help folks on the private sector. And so with this training video for the New York Transit Authority, we're training them how to maintain and repair escalators so that everyone can be safe. So here's a brand new, so it was like a 2-hour DVD, it was 12 menus, 97 video clips, over 1,000 shots, 90-page script. You know, that's the kind of thing I enjoy doing. So at the end, you've got someone who can look at a training video and say, okay, I need to learn about how to change this one thing. And you just go to the menu, hit this one button, there's the video, shows you how to do it. Yeah. So
well, that's great.
That must have taken some time.
Months.
Yeah, no
months.
Doubt.
Yeah, so
you just decide on what scenes that for that particular day.
Well, we actually had to go through the manual. You know, I'm not exaggerating. This is much manual
and
write a script, mm-hmm. write a script from that manual, and then separate it into sections,
and then get technicians to do the work.
Well, what happens is after you write the script, then you go and I made a shot list of every shot mm-hmm. in that 90-page script, over 1,000 shots. And then I had to catalog it in a certain order so when we're at the bottom of the escalator, we can shoot all the stuff that needed to be talked about at the bottom of the escalator, even though on the DVD it may have been different sections, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then we had a technician who knew the escalator who was on camera doing the work, but we had a voiceover. So there was, you know, 2 hours of voiceover showing the technician how to do this. Somebody also put graphics up and that type of thing. Mm-hmm. You can go to our website at eaglevideo.com and see a couple clips under the demo section on how we did that. But one thing I love about my job is I get to meet so many different people, do so many different kinds of videos, and learn a little bit about their work.
So I was just thinking you must have some kind of very eclectic encyclopedia of knowledge.
I know a lot about pickles.
Really?
Because
yeah,
I did a video. I did a video on the Mount Olive Pickle Company. They wanted a tour video. So I spent 3 days shooting in their factory. So and it's amazing, and I got to meet all these neat people, and went down to Mount Olive on the last night of the year. They mm-hmm. dropped a big giant pickle down. Went to the pickle drop, and we went to the state fair and shot them at their booth over there, and so then we put together a little 14-minute tour video that they're gonna, I guess they're gonna sell it, and they're gonna show it. So when people come from all over the world to that little company Mount Olive, they'll get to see a video, and they'll see more than they would have seen if they'd taken a little tour.
Sure.
And it's a fun video. In fact, you can see the whole thing on our website. And they won several national awards.
Does it get into the ins and outs of actually making the pickles?
Oh, yeah, the whole thing. You'll love it. You'll love it. It's a dilly of a pickle.
Yes, I believe
so. Good grief.
And what was interesting is...
been mauled by pickles.
Yeah, so I know about escalators and pickles. So I got a neighbor who bought this big old rain barrel, big old black rain barrel, mm-hmm. okay, for like $20 at some army surplus store, and it said India on it. I said, I bet that's a pickle jar. I bet that's a thing for pickles. And it turns out that Mount Olive Pickle Company gets their baby gherkins from India, and they grow them on vines, on trellises. And then they put them in these huge plastic canisters, and they ship them, takes them 6 weeks to boat them over to North Carolina, and they keep them in the brine. Okay.
My goodness.
Yeah. So just fascinating little things.
Now you say they grow them on vines, but they have to. These are not vines that
they're trellises.
They just have to. Essentially, it's a fresh batch every time, right? Because it's,
I guess
it's
so.
Like
that I don't know. I just saw the containers.
Maintain a cucumber vine?
I don't think so. I think they're annuals.
But one of the most interesting shots that you'll see in the video is the people pounding the big old the full cucumbers into the jars. You know how when you get a big jar of cucumbers out of the big ones, the big pickles, and it's hard to pull them out?
Right.
Well, it's because they hammer them in there with mallets. Yeah. So you can see that on the video, too. It's a lot of fun. It's a fun video.
Is there something that you have not done as a videographer that you really hope to be able to do someday?
Gosh. I've done so much. I don't know. It's just new things. I like to do new things, and I like to use the power video to help people. So that's a wide open thing. Yeah,
right.
It's whatever. I like new things.
I'm definitely coming knocking on your door for some work.
Some new things.
Some new things, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'll tell you that videographer, I don't really like that word.
Okay.
I'm a producer, mm-hmm. and a cameraman, a writer, an editor. But videographer to me means that you're shooting weddings, or you're standing there and a director's telling you what to do.
Uh-huh.
Where a photographer goes out there as like a journalist. You know, mm-hmm. you go out there with your camera and you capture things. Where a videographer, in my mind, is more a person that stands behind the camera and shoots. You know,
so more
a
like
game
a visual journalist, or what?
Yeah, exactly.
What to describe what you see?
Oh, that's
yeah.
good.
Okay. Yeah. I like that. Yeah, yeah. Visual
but,
journalist.
Right.
But as I've gotten older, I've been letting more of the young folks shoot for me. And I'm more of a producer, writer, editor. And
the Mark Twain coming out of him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let the kids do it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Go ahead and paint that picket fence.
But one of the things I love about my job is the editing process. The editing process is so interesting because you can take a script and, okay, there's a script. That's wonderful. Then you go shoot it. It becomes more wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And then you bring it into the edit suite and put it all together. And there's
create
this,
the
there's
gold.
This, and then all of a sudden, this thing is there's a synergy that's created. You've got all these separate parts. But when you edit it together, it's something even better than the parts separated.
Mm-hmm.
It's incredible. It's fun. I really enjoy editing.
What a degree or level of knowledge that takes, and skill. I mean, I once took some film with the little Sony Handycam out at the beach of the oceans and birds and so on and so forth, with the idea I was going to put this thing, I was going to edit it.
Create
I'm
a tapestry.
Sorry. I mean, it's like 3 years, 4 years ago. I can't make this thing look anything less than choppy and jumpy, and
yeah.
it's
so you
really
need somebody like Bruce.
Yeah, you need to come. And, do you give classes? Do you teach people?
I do.
How to do
I
this?
Teach editing.
Ah,
I have. There's some software I use called Final Cut Pro. It's a it's Apple
mm-hmm.
software, and it's what a lot of editors around the world use. In fact, there's several forums you can go to learn about Final Cut Pro. But I do teach class to folks. And it's such a great software. I try to learn something new every day from that
when
software.
When do you teach these classes?
When I get people to collect them together. I can go anywhere. You know, a lot of corporations that use the software want me to come
uh-huh.
and teach their employees how to better themselves, that type of thing.
So contact you through the website and
oh,
see
sure.
if we can get a group together.
Yeah. But it's a great tool. It's a wonderful tool. And it gives you the power to put things together to make something better than the
mm-hmm.
parts. And so, the editing is just a most fun process. And I've had a couple people that are interns that came from NC State. Every now and then I would take an intern in, and I would teach them about editing. And I got one young man who's on his own now, did a great job. Rain Bennett was an intern with me. Now he started Flying Flounder Productions. I think he moved up to New York City now.
That name sounds vaguely familiar.
Yeah, he was in Chapel Hill.
Okay.
But so, you know, the love of editing is something that I love to share with folks. I can talk all day about that.
I seem to recall, even when I knew you 20-some, 30-some years ago, that was a passion in you. So it's not something you just realize. It's something that's always been a part of you.
And what's interesting is the photographer's eye. It turns out that I'm third-generation photographer, and my son now, the younger one who's the guitarist, is fourth-generation photographer. And it's really neat to see. My grandmother, my father's mother, was a shutter bug, camera bug, you know. She had a camera club.
I like that.
She was in a camera club and used to take pictures in Yosemite and all that. She lived in Colorado.
Beautiful.
And then my dad got inherited her 4x3 camera and would take pictures and took a lot of pictures when we were growing up. And then I started taking pictures, took a lot of pictures. I showed you the one at Channel 5 when I was
mm-hmm.
much younger. And now the digital is just incredible. I love digital. And so my wife takes a lot of pictures for her painting. But my younger son takes pictures now and loves to take in black and white. So he'll take the digital camera and turn it into black and white.
I still love black and white, yeah.
Yeah, so that's nice. So I guess that part of doing video is my background in photography. And then I get to, you know, because that's all, when you're shooting video, you're not creating, you're just capturing. So you have to have that eye. You have to have the perspective and look at light and shadow and how things sit together. And it's all in how you move the camera. It's not creating. It's just capturing. And so there you have. And so it's a gift that
learning
I guess
how
I have.
Smooth though in capturing.
Yeah, and well, and it's interesting with the still camera from the video. You know, the video you have to roll. You have to be on before it ever happens,
mm-hmm.
so that when it happens, you've got it. So that's a little bit different than taking it at the exact same
time. So you really like the digital aspect that's come out. I was wondering about that because since you were so immersed in video before, I was wondering how you really...
Video is so interesting because I've been in it 35 years, and seeing the technology change is incredible.
And you like what we have now, the digital.
I really, really do. I really love the digital because Final Cut Pro is all about editing non-linearly.
Mm-hmm.
Many years ago, we would edit linearly.
Mm-hmm.
So you take a shot, you put A, and then you put B, and then you put C. If you want to take A out or B out in the middle, what would you have to do? You have to go back and start again at A and redo it from A to then add C and then D. So now with non-linear, it's like cut and pasting on a word process. You just move it around. Mm-hmm. Before, it was like a typewriter. You know, your typewriter, if you just screwed it up, you had to start again. Pull out a sheet of paper and start over.
Remember it well, yes.
So digital is incredible. And I'll never forget, I edit a lot for GlaxoSmithKline, go all over the country and support their sales presentations. And in the past, 1,000 pounds, 8 cases, just to edit cuts only, 2 channels of audio, can't even fade to black, okay? They take a truck with a forklift just to get it into my hotel room to take this all apart and build this together. Okay, so it's cuts only, no fade, 2 channels of audio. Now I bring it on the plane with my laptop. I can do 99 layers of video, amount of audio, incredible effects. It's wonderful. But it was scary the first time. I was scared because tape is so solid. When you do Beta SP, has been around a long time, it always works. There it is.
Mm-hmm.
When you all of a sudden you're editing digitally, you've got hard drives that can crash, you've got a lot of things that happen, you have to render a lot. You were on the beta, you just cut it and there it is right there. So there's a lot of changes in mindsets, but overall it's very powerful and a lot of fun.
No doubt. So you're happy to be where you are.
I'm enjoying the journey.
Wonderful. Well, anything you'd like to say as a closing statement? I think it's about time for us to skip over to the next show that's coming on. That would be John Paul, but I don't see him here yet. So give us a wrap on whatever
you'd
like to
close
out with.
Well, I would just like to share some thoughts with young folks that they need to find out what their gift is. Everyone has a gift. And I think that as you go through life, you don't want to waste. I would think that 80% or more of people at work don't like their work. And I think that's sad. I think that everyone has a gift, and if you could find your gift while you're still in school, you can develop that and find a job that uses your gift. Then you'll enjoy it, and you'll have a lot more joy in life. And so I think that when you're in elementary school and middle school and high school, find out what you love. If you do what you love...
Or just focus on what you love. Don't take it so for granted by just enjoying it vicariously, but look at it perhaps more closely to see if there's an aspect of it that you can identify with as a labor of love for the rest of your life. Somehow.
And I really do believe that if you do what you love, the money will follow.
True.
In different stages, of course. And it may not be all the money you want, but you can make a living. And I think it's important more to be happy than to make a lot of money.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
Yes, I do.
Life's too short. It really is.
So, money does not equal happiness.
Yes. But if you do what your gift is, then you will be happy.
Yes, I believe that too. Wake up in the morning and do what you want to do. That makes for a happy day.
And so I do. I wake up on Mondays, and I think it's wonderful that I get to go to work and do what I love to do and help other people.
Then he wakes up on Tuesday and goes, oh, blast, I've got to be on the radio. Well, Bruce, it's been an absolute delight having you on, and this will be the first of many times because I'm sure there are other adventures we can catch up on in the future, and I definitely want to connect with you outside the radio station. Just want to say thank you to everybody out there. Thank you, Carolina Theatre, for being our primary sponsor here at Claudio Speakeasy and Radio Theatre, the literary and all else. Thank you, my co-host, Audrey Layden.
It is great fun to be here every Tuesday at the Speakeasy.
That's it. So just want to thank you folks for tuning in, and until next time, cheers.